Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. Today marks the centenary of the birth of Margaret Thatcher, or as she's born, Margaret Hilda Roberts, born in Grantham, Lincolnshire, methinks over the shop, so close to the geographic centre of England. And her father, Alfred, was famously a thrifty shopkeeper, owned three-corner shops. Her mother, as Margaret Thatcher said, was rather a Martha. Most people won't recognize the biblical allusion these days. So a shrinking violet. And Margaret had one sister. Was it Muriel? In Margaret Thatcher's Who's Who entry, she famously didn't even mention her mother. And then it was Leo Absey, that former Labour MP in the noughties. He wrote a psychological study of Margaret Thatcher, Margaret, daughter of Beatrice. I think that was her mother's name, saying, why does she so ignore her mother? But she was a chip off the old block with her father, as in someone of strong principles who believed that if you look after the pennies, the pounds will turn into themselves and so forth. Independent mind and all the rest of it. So Maggie Thatcher, born there in 1925, grew up in a lower middle class household. And her father was even, how to put it, miserly, insisting they'd wash in cold water because hot water was too expensive. But by the 1930s, they'd reached moderate prosperity, could afford the occasional treat. He came from a working class family, was obliged to leave school at 12, work as a shop assistant briefly at Arundel School, kept volunteering in the First World War, turned down on the basis of ill health. I got all this from reading Maggie Thatcher's two-volume autobiography, The Path to Power and The Downing Street Years. Anyhow, she's brought up in the Methodist Church. Remember her saying that if a girl wore ribbons in her hair, some of the older parishioners would tut-tut and say, that is the first step to Rome. Back in a time when British national identity was linked to Protestantism. And she later said of the Ulster conflict, as a Protestant myself, I naturally empathised with my fellow Reformed Christians. I found that staggering at the time, and obviously the attitude has completely disappeared. Anyway, so she studied very hard at school, and she spent her free time working in her father's business, and then she went to Somerville College, Oxford, in the Second World War. Not so many boys were there, the war being on. She read chemistry. So you think she was very factual, but actually she was quite into the humanities as well. Graduated. She was above all the Conservative Association, couldn't join the union. It was all male. The Oxford Union is the debating society, and worked for some chemical company for a while, and then decided to read for the bar. So there are reports people wrote on her when she applied for a job saying, the woman is dangerously headstrong. But she stood as a Conservative candidate in 1951, and there are very few women in Parliament of those days. The leading female Tory was Florence Horsburgh, the Conservative Unionist MP for Dundee at the time. And another internal Conservative Party assessment of her said that she has a very strong personality. I read some of these. There's the Bodleian Library in Oxford has the Margaret Thatcher archive, and they're on display at the Conservative Party conference in Manchester. Anyhow, so later she married a man 10 years older than herself, Dennis Thatcher. Obviously, she adopted his married name. He was an oil executive doing very well, had been in the Second World War, had actually been married and had first discovered his wife had an affair, divorced her on that basis. But I think that wasn't known to the public till after he died. So soon they were blessed with the twins, Mark and Carol, as in boy and girl. So she didn't practice at the bar very long, but I remember a speech by her, and she said that she learned at the criminal bar, never admit more than absolutely necessary. That's something you could admit, you don't need to admit, we won't deny it, we simply won't mention it. We won't lie about it, but remain silent on that head if it's not helpful. Anyway, so she was returned to Parliament in 1959 for the Finchley constituency in London. So Finchley is probably the most Jewish constituency in the United Kingdom, only about 10% Jewish. There'd been a Viennese Jewish refugee in her house in the 1930s, 1940s, which made her a real philo-Semite and Zionist. So she was an unremarkable backbencher in the 1960s. There was about one woman in the cabinet at the time. And then 1970, Sir Edward Heath, well, he was knighted later, formed a Conservative administration. She was made Education Secretary. Is it on the basis that schooling is a female thing? Now, Labour had already taken away free milk for secondary school children. She decided to take it away from the over eights. I think those under eights still got it. And then that epithet, Maggie Thatcher, milk snatcher, stuck. So she must have had something of a Lincolnshire accent and was rather shrill, but then affected received pronunciation and began to speak higher pitched. Okay, so was a conventional Heathite minister, and then 1975, he'd lost 3 out of 4 elections as leader of the party. He submitted himself to a leadership challenge, and to everyone's astonishment, she won. She's leader of the opposition, and she led the party to victory in May 1979 after that winter of discontent under Jim Callaghan. No relation. Well, what else can I say about her? So Keith Joseph was really her lodestar, and he'd been trailblazing some of these free market ideas. Even Enoch Powell in the 1960s had suggested them. And this is a time of Butskillism. If you take R.A. Butler, Hugh Gaitskill, the Conservative and Labour to Chancellor Exchequers, soonest after the Second World War, blend the names to create Gaitskill. Well, actually, there's Hugh Dalton, but let's forget Dr. Dalton. And so there was a consensus between the two major parties. The Liberals were scarcely worth considering back then. They would pursue broadly the same economic policy, was a planned economy, large amount of public ownership, many state-owned industries and so forth, prices and income policy. And some people began to say that's nonsense. So Keith Joseph had made some injudicious remarks about unwed mothers or mentally unfit mothers bearing too many children and degenerating the whatever genetic stock of the country, something eugenic like that. So that ruled his out of contention. Had it not been for that, he would have stood for the leadership of the party. Heath might well have won. Even if Joseph had won, would the Conservatives have won the 79 election? It's more dubious. Would Thatcher ever become Prime Minister? It's doubtful. And I know a woman from Nottinghamshire, a miner's daughter from a dyed-in-the-wool Labour family, who cast her ballot for the Tory party in 1979, as she wanted to see a woman enter number 10. And she did, indeed she did, standing on the step saying, "May I, to quote the words of St. Francis of Assisi, bring harmony where there's been discord," and stuff like that. Well, she was not a uniter. She was a conviction politician. As I say, she was dangerously sure of the path she was pursuing. Well, she was a little bit moderate at first. There were lots of wets in the cabinet, and some of the grandees looked down on her. She was lower middle class, a woman, and so forth. She was younger than them, so she's 54, she's no spring chicken. So she wasn't that secure till obviously the Falklands victory in 1982. And things have been going quite badly. She said they had to curb inflation, and if unemployment had to go up, so be it. But they ended foreign exchange controls, so you could bring as much money abroad as you wanted to. And they began privatizing things all through the 80s. So it's victory in the Falklands did well for her. Some people said that Britain shouldn't fight, had shades of Suez, and it was quite a gamble, and things could have gone very badly. One of those aircraft carriers could have been sunk, in which case the United Kingdom would not have had the air cover to prosecute the war, but she was crowned with victory. She never blinked when terrorists tried to blackmail her, starving themselves to death. If they wanted to commit suicide, well, there's no reason why she should bow the knee to these criminals. And so they committed suicide in the Mays prison. What else? So she wanted to keep the United Kingdom together. She defended the UK, but she made some mistakes. Some of her policies were particularly unpopular outside England. Moreover, when she introduced the community charge, subsequently dubbed the poll tax, it was introduced in North Britain before South Britain, and people were very bitter about that, an issue that separates a generation later. The highlight of her career was meeting me when I was 14. And asking her, "If you value peace more than prestige, why did you not negotiate with whatever extremists to get hostage free?" And she said, "Peace at what price?" So she thought this would have shades of Munich. So that was her. She seemed to go a little bit loony towards the end. "We are a grandmother," and going full steam ahead with unpopular policies, no turning back. That was her whole brand. So when the community charge turned out to be catastrophic, she couldn't change her mind. And that's why her deputy prime minister, Geoffrey Howe, resigned about his tragic conflict of loyalties with which I have wrestled for perhaps too long and so forth. Disagreement about European policy. Remember, there's European Economic Community. The European Union didn't exist at the time. It was mooted, but she was against joining. The pound was pegged to the Deutschmark, the most important currency in the EEC at the time. Should it go up and down with that or not? Should the United Kingdom be willing to join a single currency in principle? She was against. Geoffrey Howe was in favour. And then she appointed a complete dimwit non-entity called John Major, Chancellor Exchequer. He was in favour, but he was a completely uneducated man. He didn't know what he's talking about. Now, there are very learned people who think it's a good idea. But anyway, so then she resigned the 22nd of November 1990. Her own party brought her down. She actually got 55% of the votes of her own MPs. But she was held below the waterline. Almost half of her own MPs voted against her in that leadership contest. She'd been challenged by Sir Anthony Mayer in 1989 and won handily, but not by as much as you might think. 90% of the vote, surprising, wasn't more. But, you know, she was divisive. Her record is very mixed. Mass unemployment, crime tripling, drug addiction spreading, and so on. These are not records to be proud of. Goodness. But there were some major successes on privatization and reducing inflation. All right. Thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, then PayPal, georgecallan79@gmail.com. So she died at the age of 88 in 2013, well, 87 actually, was senile for the last few years. Certainly a very consequential person, recognised the world over, PM for 11 and a half years, the longest serving Prime Minister of the Earl of Liverpool, the third longest in history, who won three consecutive victories, but had a very mixed record. You couldn't but have an opinion of her, and sometimes adulated by many people. Her name will be remembered for millennia, when long after those of, you know, Jim Callaghan or David Cameron are forgotten. Toodaloo.